in climate. Unfortunately, there's lots of stuff in the PowerPoint slides that are basic principles of immunology. What I want to do with this early stuff here is to remind you that this will be covered in immunology class. And I want to only emphasize certain things that will help us understand the spleen and lymph node. So as we go through the first set of slides, I want to try to emphasize those things that you need to study to prepare for the histology. And that's a difficult thing because you might be tempted to study all these slides because you think I'm going to write a question about them. But I'm not. There's going to be no examination on this material except for the stuff that I point out. So please pay particular attention as we go through these first set of slides, which is mostly immunology. So let's see here. What are some of our defenses against disease? Well, this is important basic information for any discipline that's talking about the immune system. And so we can define our defenses against disease as those defenses that have nothing to do with lymphocytes. So we might call them non-immune mechanisms. What are they and where are they located? What's our first line of defense against disease, do you think? The epithelium. That's not the immune system. The immune system is lymphocytes. The immune system is a specific response to a specific bug. Epithelium doesn't care what the bug is. Epithelium is a physical barrier. So skin, and where do you find mucous membranes? Down the GI tract. It's epithelium that's wet. It's epithelium that's soft. The skin has epithelium too, epidermis, but that's rough and hard. That's keratin. Mucous membranes are soft and moist and juicy. Well, we also have the liver that, thank goodness, detoxifies certain environmental pollutants and neutralizes natural substances. Like, we don't want estrogen to hang around too long in men, you know, and make estrogen too, but we probably don't want too many. Most males don't want a high estrogen level necessarily. And so there are some normal substances that are neutralized, and of course we have environmental pollutants that are detoxified. We have chemicals released from immune cells, which are lymphocytes, and these chemicals are called cytokines. If they're released from lymphocytes, and we call them lymphokines. They're small messenger chemicals. Here's one example, and I'm not going to test you on that. But it's important to know that the immune system, composed of lymphocytes, has some very important friends. And these lymphocytes have friends that are big eaters, macrophages. And in order for a lymphocyte to be able to respond appropriately in an immune reaction, we need these macrophages to gobble up that bacterium and chop it up into little pieces and present those antigens to our immune system. So macrophages, in their process of doing what they do, are also referred to as antigen-presenting cells. Antigen-presenting cells. And so we sometimes refer to this function as APC, antigen presenting cells. So macrophages work at various levels for our defenses, and one of their most important jobs is to take bacteria, chop them up into little pieces, and present some of the active ingredients, the antigens, to our immune system. The old name for these mononuclear phagocytes, meaning macrophages, the old name was reticuloendothelial system of cells. And that name is still unfortunately preserved through the medical community. RE cells, they're sometimes referred to. RE cells are primarily macrophages. We'll talk about diseases and pathology as diseases of the RE system. We also have various products in the bloodstream that aid the immune system, and here's some of them. We also have cells in the blood called natural killer cells, which don't respond specifically to are natural killers anyway. It doesn't necessarily require, these cells don't necessarily require that a specific antigen be identified. What are some of the various mechanisms of our defenses? Well, epithelium forms physical barriers. We have chemicals like complement, cytokines, and a whole bunch of other things. And we have this process of inflammation, which is a non-immune reaction, meaning it doesn't require lymphocytes. We'll talk about the steps of inflammation, but you know all about it. The area gets red and warm and swollen and painful, and that's not lymphocytes doing that at all. We also have some parts of our anatomy where there's a low pH. Any idea where in the body where low pH would inhibit bacterial growth?
Stomach.
And the vagina. The low pH of the vagina inhibits certain bugs from growing. The process of phagocytosis we talked about a long time ago, and here is one of the most important cells in the bloodstream that can respond to an invasion of our tissue space, can respond to an infection by leaving the bloodstream and going out into the tissue space in a process we call inflammation. These neutrophils leave the bloodstream, go out and kill bacteria or dead cells, and we call this process inflammation. This happens to be a female neutrophil, or I can say that differently. This is a neutrophil from a female because the arrow is pointing at something only females will have.
Bar body.
There it is. It's called a drumstick because it looks like a Kentucky Fried Chicken leg or a drumstick there as it's projecting off of the nucleus. It's a bar body. Well, in order for those neutrophils to reach the site of the blackberry thorn sticking in your finger, or to reach the site of that wood splinter under your fingernail, or to reach the site of some bacteria growing, we need some perfume. We need some chemicals that will attract the neutrophil toward that site. And those chemicals are called chemotactic chemicals because they cause movement of neutrophils down here and macrophages to the area of the injury. Chemotaxis is what? Chemotaxis is a process by which neutrophils move from the wall of the capillary to the site of the injury. And they look like little amoeba as they're making their way through the tissue space. Macrophages come out of the blood a little bit later, so we refer to the timing here, where the neutrophils are the first white blood cell, at the site of injury, so they're analogous to the Marines. Macrophages come out later to do mop-up operations, which include getting rid of the dead Marines, and to eliminate any other injured cells and tissues. Any cells that are left behind after the battle's over, that's what the Army does. They come in after the war, well, not right here, after the major battles, and do mop-up operations, like in Afghanistan and Iraq, for example. Lysosomes. Lysosomes are the poison bags inside of both of these cells, and I can see some lysosomes faintly as these little dots in here. The poison bags that kill all the cells that the neutrophil and the macrophage eat up, or phagocytosis. Now, in order to make that bacterium here more delectable for this macrophage to surround and swallow, it's a very, very good thing to pour barbecue sauce on that bacterium. And we call that barbecue sauce an upsonin. And the process of covering the bacterium, which makes this macrophage very happy, is called opsonization. And so bacterium will be coated with some substances. I'm going to draw them like little Y's here. And one of the best uses of our immune system is for our immune system to make these antibodies right here, the little black Y's, make those antibodies to coat the victim. And the macrophages and the neutrophils can recognize this little leg sticking out there and will actively phagocytose.
Is that how we get rid of viruses? Is by surrounding the antibodies?
Yeah, the viruses are wee tiny compared to that. But a virus will have DNA or RNA, and it'll have a protein code. And when it's in the free state, and that protein code can be coated with an antibody again.
So which part is the antibody?
Antibody is this little Y-shaped protein.
So the process is opsonization, but the actual thing that's causing it?
Opsonization is the coating of the bacterium by an antibody. That's called opsonization. The chemical is called an opsonin. And the process of coating the bacteria is opsonization. And it's opsonization if the phagocyte phagocytoses the bacteria. The antibody covering a virus is not called opsonization because no phagocytosis results from that.
Yeah, so many of you, was it a chemical?
This is an antibody. In the area of opsonins, it's a category of chemicals. So far, we've talked about antibodies being an opsonin, but we also have complement acting as an opsonin, and we have number 3 and number 4. So opsonins are a broad category of any chemical. You know, you can buy opsonins as A1 barbecue sauce. You can buy opsonin as Bold. And, I mean, there's all kinds of opsonins. But there's all kinds of opsonins. We're only talking about one here, and that's the antibody. antibodies cover viruses was a question over here, and is that opsonization? No, because that doesn't stimulate phagocytosis. Those objects are too small to be phagocytosed. Antibodies are chemical released from plasma cells. Let's review that. Plasma cells go through life with one purpose in mind, and that is to display a cartwheel nucleus and to have all kinds of rough endoplasmic reticulum. This is a plasma cell. And if you look at your notes, you'll see that plasma cells release a chemical called an antibody. And if you want to have a good antibody response to an infection, you better be able to make plasma cells by the ton so that they can make that antibody. So far, in our class now, we have talked about one function of antibodies out of the many. And that function is opsonization of bacteria so that neutrophils and macrophages can eat them up and digest them. But it ain't over yet, because once this macrophage has digested the bacterium and made little tiny fragments, then that macrophage can take a fragment and put that fragment out on the cell surface of that macrophage and present it to our immune system. And that immune system now can really take off and produce memory cells and produce more antibodies and more memory cells, so that the next time that that bacterium invades your body, you are ready to go.
What is the compound, or what is written under antibodies?
What's written under antibodies is something we don't need to know yet, but let's go back here. There it is. Polymer. What we need to know. Yeah.
What was the Y-shaped
antibody. That's the antibody. The antibody, if you look at it in biochemistry class, when you look at an antibody in biochemistry class, you will see that an antibody has two long polypeptide chain. Do you know what a polypeptide is?
Yes.
Long protein chains and two short protein chains. And these are called the heavy chains and the light chains. And notice that when you look at the structural chemistry of an antibody, it reminds me of the letter Y. Four protein chains. I may have got my tongue in the way. What did I say?
He says that
they
have to be
changed
by the ton.
Ton, yes, we have to have a ton. Well, you know, that's an exaggeration, isn't it? When we look at a little baby boy born with A gamma globulinemia, that means no antibody in the emia. Where's the emia?
Blood.
In the blood. No antibodies in the blood. So they cannot activate neutrophils and macrophages because they can't make the opsonin. They can't make barbecue sauce. Now, let me say this another way. Antibodies don't kill anything. Antibodies are a major part of your immunity. They don't kill a blasted thing. What kills? Macrophages and neutrophils. So why do we need antibodies then? To oppose the bacterium and attract the neutrophils and macrophages, right? Right. Does that help? Yes. Okay, look. Yes. The neutrophils have AK-47. And the macrophages have pretty little 45 pistols. And the neutrophils with their AK-47s have very powerful lysosomes. And the macrophages are a little wimpy. And they don't get to wear the white uniform, do they?
Apparently, there's been a total breakdown to that.
Yeah, you're right. It's a poison. It's a poison that the cells have in them. You're right. The lysosomes that are doing that. Macrophages are missing a few things that the neutrophils have. And we're going to wait until next year. They're missing a few things.
I don't mind.
Okay, let's move on here. Why do we have a fever when we have an infection? Our body temperature is high. What do you think about
that?
When we get an infection in the bloodstream, our temperature goes up to 104 degrees Fahrenheit. Well, I don't like that much. We just have an average infection, we still have a fever. And the reason we have a fever is because macrophages secrete. Macrophages are busy munching away, and they secrete substances that are called internal fire starters. Pyromaniac, you know that word? Pyromaniac. Pyrogenesis. That means that macrophages release substances that cause fever, cause heat, cause fire, as they said a long time ago. Those come primarily from macrophages.
Did you ever get fever without having an infection?
Yes. If any macrophage is activated, let's say, for example, a person has a heart attack, and cells in the left ventricle have all died. Say the person is still alive. Let's say a quarter of the cells in the left ventricle died. And now we have dead cells there, and we've got to get rid of them. And so we call in the army.
Okay, so it's not actually infection enough.
Right. Any kind of dead, injured cells, whether they be our normal cells or whether they be alien invaders, doesn't matter. You know what? Okay, so these substances, scientific name there, these substances get into the bloodstream and flow to the hypothalamus, and the hypothalamus resets your internal body temperature, and your temperature goes up. And we'll talk about the advantages of that at some other time. Now, the next section, finally, asks the question, what are our specific defenses? What are our defenses that require an absolute DNA analysis? Well, no, that's not right. How about CSI Miami? They're always testing DNA because they want to know the identity of the culprit. They want to know the identity of who's dead. They want to know the identity of who's did the killing. We need to know the specific identity, and when we do know that specific identity, then we can defend ourselves against those particular individual things. We have various bacteria, and macrophages and neutrophils don't give a hoot about what that identity of that bacterium is. They're going to kill them anyway. Our immune system needs to know the identity of the invader, let's say, again using bacteria or viruses, and then our immune system produces a ton of lymphocytes, which will specifically produce antibodies against that invader. And we call this our immune system. And immune reactions, therefore, are reactions that lymphocytes make in defense of our body. Neutrophils and macrophages are not immune cells. They are inflammatory cells for inflammation. So where are these immune cells located?
So I don't want to digress too much, but what happens in autoimmune situations?
These immune cells are activated in immune reactions in people with autoimmune diseases, and those immune cells are attacking our normal cells. Now we're going to talk about why that should not happen today. And we're not going to talk about how it does happen, which is next year.
Okay.
So what's important is that we don't want our immune system to the lymphocytes to attack our heart. We don't want the immune cells to attack our thyroid gland. We don't want the immune cells to attack our adrenal gland. We don't want immune cells to attack basement membrane in our skin. And when that happens, we have autoimmune diseases. Immune reactions against self, against our normal selves. And where is this education of our immune cells done?
Thymus University.
Thymus University and Bone Marrow College. Bone Marrow College. Where are these cells located? Where are these immune cells located? Where are these lymphocytes located in our body? Let's see if we can find those places. Let's see here. I bet we can find them in a jiffy. Where are they? Oh, they were in the other slide. Where are those lymphocytes found? In lymphoid organs. Let's name them. Oh, tonsil, lymph node, spleen, appendix, gallbladder, bolt. All those lymphoid organs are where our immune cells are located. Oh, malt is a combination of galt and malt. What does malt stand for? Mucous membrane-associated lymphoid tissue, and we have two types. Those along the GI tract, where the malt is called galt, and those along the respiratory tract, where the mucus-associated lymphoid tissue is called malt. Bronchus. Okay, so we have lymphoid organs and lymphatic vessels, and the cells spend some time in the bloodstream as well. In the bloodstream and in lymphoid organs and in lymphatic vessels. So they're a privileged group of cells to be able to wander and meander through your body all day long in so many different compartments. And clearly, blood cells don't do that. Blood cells stay in the blood vessels, but lymphocytes have security clearances, and they can pass through doors and passageways that no other cell is allowed to get through. They have tremendous access to lymphoid organs, the tissue space, lymphatic vessels, and the bloodstream, and that is a rare situation. And of course, they're also found in the tissue space. What are antibodies? Read, please, page 400 and 401 of Ross, which defines antibodies for you. The chemical names are immunoglobulins or gamma globulins. Gamma globulins is the chemical name. Then we have various antibodies, some called antibody G or inhibitor G, some called antibody A, and others. Our most important concern right at the moment is how to defend ourselves against infections, and we better have plenty of that, immunoglobulin G. Immunoglobulin E is a kind of antibody that cause allergies. Immunoglobulin E. Immunoglobulin A is an antibody produced along the GI tract in malt. Antibodies produced along the GI tract that would respond to food antigens, for one. And we have others. What are antigens? Antigens are defined as the substance that initiates the production of an immune response. Antigens are substances that will initiate an immune response. And sometimes, unfortunately, that immune response is an autoimmune response. Foreign proteins generally, but also other things, other substances. And there's that antibody, much drawn much better than I drew it, and it has four chains, two green ones, and two lighter, small, pale ones here. And the configuration is such that the antibody can recognize an antigen only at specific sites on that Y-shaped antibody. And that specific site there is referred to as the FAD end. We got two of them. The FAD, that's the end of the antibody that recognizes the antigen, the foreign protein, the alien substance, the surface of a bacterium, recognized in a specific location. And down here, at this other end, is the end of a molecule that's recognized by the neutrophil and macrophage. And so the antibodies can coat the antigenic surfaces of a bug, and the neutrophils can recognize it by that little end there, and that's called the FC end. That's the site that's recognized by the phagocyte. There's another drawing, same idea, just another way of looking at it. They're all symbolic, so not very real, probably. Cell-mediated immunity and humoral immunity. Well, here's a lymphocyte, as we might see in the bloodstream. And since our immune reactions are classified in two ways, an immune reaction can be described as a cell-mediated immune reaction, or it can be described as a humoral immune reaction. We have those two types. They're both specific immune reactions that respond to a specific foreign substance or antigen. Now, when you look at this lymphocyte in the bloodstream, in a blood slide, we have slides in the lab if you actually want to look at them, and I think Mark's group, he actually did look at some of those slides. But you can look at them if you like. And when you search thoroughly, and it doesn't take very long, you find this little tiny cell, almost, well, just a little bigger than a red blood cell. Red blood cell, remember, is 8 microns or 7.5 microns in diameter. This lymphocyte is a little bigger. And when you see that lymphocyte, you see, boy, how do I trust that cell? You know, I've got nothing but a nucleus. This is a waste of my time to have that defending my body. If you take a look at a neutrophil and a macrophage, they're macho. But this little twerp, lymphocyte, how's it going to do anything? And by the way, it can either engage in cell-mediated immunity or humoral immunity, and they don't do both. And so we have two separate kinds of lymphocytes that will cover all of our bases. And we only have two bases, either cell-mediated immunity or humoral immunity, and T lymphocytes provide cell-mediated immunity, and B lymphocytes provide humoral immunity. And when you look at that lymphocyte, you have no clue on which one she is. Is she the B cell or the T cell? Well, we could stain it with specific stains, which would identify it, but H and E stain, we don't know. Humoral means fluid, like a vapor or water. It's not funny. It's fluid of water. And what humoral immunity is all about is antibodies dissolved in water. So B cells are engaged in humoral immunity because antibodies are dissolved in a fluid. And they search out the surface of a bacterium and opsonize that bacterium. And the cell that is responsible for all this wonderful activity is a B lymphocyte. T cells are engaged in cell-mediated immunity. That cell-mediated term, if you haven't studied this, hopefully, shouldn't mean anything to you. What the heck's he talking about? Cell-mediated. Well, what we're talking about is best translated as direct cell killing. T lymphocytes have the ability to directly kill a target cell. And in a sense, that's a little bit like a macrophage and a neutrophil, isn't it? But the difference is that a macrophage and a neutrophil has to phagocytose the victim. T cells take a cell, attach to the surface of that cell, release poisons, and the cell dies. That's direct cell-mediated immunity, which can be provided for by cells that have been educated where? They've learned how to do this in the thymus, and they hopefully passed with an AC. Because if they didn't, guess what happens to them? They are executed. Thank goodness we don't do that here.
So I was going to ask something, and I didn't earlier, about the hypothalamus. I'm wondering, kids seem to have really extraordinary fevers and reactions to things. Is that because they don't have the T cells yet? They're still being developed?
My best guess is that they need to develop their hypothalamus to provide for a much better regulation of their internal body temperature.
Okay.
So clinically, this is what people talk about when they talk about a killer T cell count?
This cell is doing the killing. It's called a killer T cell. And we don't have too much time, but this killer T cell can sometimes be described as a CD8 positive T cell, or as you suggested, could be called a cytotoxic T lymphocyte. These are all essentially equivalent terms. Killer T cell or cytotoxic T lymphocyte. And that's what this cell is right here. Now, these cells that are responsible before becoming plasma cells. These cells differentiate into plasma cells, and we drew that plasma cell a little while ago. And that cell here, if it's a B lymphocyte, when it becomes activated, will transform itself into a cell that's loaded with rough endoplasmic reticulum, has a cartwheel-shaped nucleus, and is pouring out tons of antibodies.
Are we going to go over all this in real detail? Because I notice everybody has a lot of questions and I have tons, but there is a point where we're going over all this, right?
It's called immunology class.
Okay,
we got to give you the basic things now so that when immunology comes around and they start rattling off all these facts about T cells and B cells, that you have some sort of basis to start with there. Yeah, the details will be tremendous when you get to immunology class. And that's why so many people opt to take it in the summertime. I vote for that. If you want to do a good job in immunology class, take it when you're not taking any other classes. That's a hint. Very good idea. If you can manage it. If you can't, well, then a lot of people make it through without taking the summertime. What I was getting at here is that B cells make antibodies to cooked bacteria, and B cells, if it's a B cell, is present in our body for many purposes. One is to defend against bacterial infections. The T cell doesn't attack bacteria. The T cell attacks cells and kills them because it's cellular toxic T lymphocyte, and it's doing this job here. But that's not a bacterium. That's one of our cells. That's the liver cell, maybe. And why in the world would we have a T lymphocyte, just looks like this one, why would we have a T lymphocyte killing our liver cell? It's got something on its surface that it recognizes. It's sticking out right here, let's say. There. And the lymphocyte attaches to it. What's inside that hepatocyte? What's inside that liver cell that we've got to destroy by our T lymphocytes?
It has the copy of the DNA sequence.
What is in that cell, living in that cell,
virus
that we have to destroy?
Something bad.
A virus. T cells attack virus-infected cells. If we have no T cells, like the baby born without a thymus, that baby will surely die of viral infections. If a baby is born without B cells and without antibodies, what is that baby going to die from?
Bacteria.
Bacterial infection. Right. T cells do not kill bacteria. So what are we saying about this? What we're saying is, in order to kill bacteria, we have to burn the house down. The hepatitis B virus is living inside of our hepatocytes and going, nah, 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 nah. I have this plasma membrane around me, and I'm going to... I'm going to be forever protected. So if evolution came around and this T cell attached to the viral infected cell, and of course we end up with a disease called hepatitis. And why do we have hepatitis? Are the viruses killing the house? The viruses love it in that house. So what's killing our liver cells in hepatitis? Our immune system. Our T lymphocytes are killing our liver cells. Otherwise, the viruses will spread throughout the entire liver and maybe other places. Let's take AIDS as a good example. The contemporary belief is that we have this virus called HIV. And these viruses live inside of a lymphocyte. Looks just like that. And inside this lymphocyte, our HIV is destroying that cell population. Now, the T cell that the HIV lives in is not this one. Is not the killer T cell. But the HIV virus lives inside of another T cell called the CD4 cell or called a helper T cell. And a helper is not a killer. A helper cell is a helper. And so the helper cell population is disappearing in the AIDS patient. And can you think of one reason why that might be happening? A virus is living in the cell. How are we going to get rid of the virus? We're going to kill the cell with our CTL, with our CD8 cell, because that's the killer cell. And it attaches to our helper cell and destroys the helper cell. And so